You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Jules Gill, I have never have an introduction prepared. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Jules Gill. That's all I'm going to go with. It's the Untitled Banter podcast, UBP, UBP, UBP. How are you doing?
Oh, wait, give me a moment, man. I literally feel like I've just woken up and I just had a brick thrown at my face. What is going on here? It's the UBP. It's Scott Tilford. It's me, Jules Gill. We're all here together with these lovely people listening. Because it's time to answer some big burning questions.
It's time to answer all the best questions. Every single week we ask people for their different submissions, what they'd like us to talk about, different talking points, different questions. I'm talking very fast. I will slow down. I've got the dressing gown on. The dressing gown
Mate,
of pure energy.
Too. Gown gang represent.
The gown gang back in full. So we put a tweet out yesterday. A whole bunch of people submitted questions. Thank you all very, very much. Had to remove that tweet because of some hilarious shenanigans, which I'm not going to go into.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know either,
NDA?
Mate.
We can't talk about that.
If you were there and you saw it, then you saw a little window into the realities of what we're not supposed to be talking about. But you got to come back later for when things are more legal. But we still got a nice bunch of questions. And I did bring some stuff in from previous weeks as well, because we always have a massive amount of stuff to pick from. First question from Coach Marv. What is your current you should try this, you won't believe how great it is game recommendation, and why is it Hot Wheels Unleashed? Now, Hot Wheels Unleashed, oh my God, Jules Gale, why is this game so good? It has no right being this good.
So I heard about this the other day. Somebody, I was up
probably
in well, the thing is, I was up in Manchester and somebody was talking about it, just like, I can't wait for this game to come out, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. It does actually sound pretty good. Log in this morning and you were like banging on about it as well. And I was like, what makes this game so good? So I looked at some footage and I was like, yeah, actually, this does look really nice.
It's unbelievable.
And then you sent me a little tweet of you who made a little Venom car. And I was like, okay, all right.
Customization side of it is genuinely incredible. Like, it's weird because, like I said, it's so out of nowhere. Like, when was the last Hot Wheels game? The last sort of pocket racing game that I played was like Revolt on the PS1.
And man.
And that was a deep, deep cut. But like, that's the thing. So Hot Wheels Unleashed, it's 120 frames a second, 4K, whatever, on the Series X. It is at least 4K 60 on the PS5. But it just is this really tight arcade racer with a really good physics model. And it has this whole sort of like depth to the way that you play it, in regards to there are a couple of different boost options. And when you take flight, you can carve through the air and try and get...
It looks so much fun.
It's really cool. And like, you know, some of the shortcuts rely on you inverting your car entirely and sticking to another surface. Yeah. And then going somewhere else and coming back in.
Reminds me of kind of like how Roll Cage did their sort of design and stuff like that. Even like the Mario Kart game, Mario Kart 8 decided to use that sort of like gravity, didn't it?
When you're sticking to another surface in Unleashed, the wheels all crackle and become all electric and stuff. So it's kind of like in Mario Kart. But overall, the presentation is what's really stellar. Like ray tracing, lots of reflections. The cars just look perfect. It's kind of like that Lego Builder's Journey thing where it just looks like the thing
amazing.
From when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And then the customization side of it, you can build whatever track you want and you build it around an also customizable basement. So if you just want to change the walls, the floors, a bunch of accessories in the basement, wind the track around.
Don't
so
you
good.
Absolutely love it when just games like this just come out of nowhere? Like there was a little bit of hype for it beforehand, but there was no like mass media like coverage for it.
No.
And then it just hits and you're like, oh, this game is just... nice.
It's just
a nice addition to the library.
Yeah, and I sat last night, I was like, oh, the customization side of it is actually really good. Like Forza's level of customization. So I was like, I'm gonna make a Venom car. I made a Shovel Knight car, like a blue with an orange trim, with some horns on it. It's a good time. And I'm gonna make a Halo car when I'm finished recording, or tonight, just green car with a yellow visor. I wanna make all the cars. It's like Animal Crossing custom t-shirt energy all over again. And so that game, there is one big glaring flaw which is yet to fully materialize, which is that there is a loot system in it, where you are getting, there are two different currencies, you are getting loot boxes. It's not monetized yet, but they have absolutely built it for that purpose.
Okay, and, so at one point in time, you're just going to log in and be like, I
would bet, what can I even bet? My Super Mario 3 mug that's next to me as I'm recording, that they will absolutely monetize the living hell out of this in the coming months after the positive word of mouth has passed. That is absolutely what they're doing. I will eat my headphones if that's not the case, because they've literally built it to be that in the future.
I must have banged on about this before, but that is my least favorite thing about the industry at the moment, is that because games evolve and they have this live service model, it means that they can change their monetization and stuff like that going forward. I hate that games do this after the review period. It feels like we should be able to do another review being like, hang on a minute,
we reviewed the
game here at this point in time and you've changed that, so our score of a 9 out of 10 is now going right down because you have decided to get all money hungry about it.
Well, it's that whole thing of like cashing in on positive word of mouth around the reviews, you get your really good review scores, and the game is really solid, really recommendable. I think it's £40 in the UK if you get the basic version. But that is that, there is that whole reality too, depending on how things go going forward. I think it'll just become a free-to-play game, but it is that weird thing of one version of the game at review and something else entirely in a few more months, like what Metal Gear Solid 5 did or what Crash Team Racing did. And so it's going to be case by case, but at the minute, Hot Wheels Unleashed is genuinely really incredible. It's just a solid arcade racer with a really cool physics model.
So in answer to the question that Coach Marv provided, is that your recommendation as well, Hot Wheels?
It is. It is at the minute, because everyone I've told, hey, by the way, there's a Hot Wheels game that's genuinely great. They've just gone, leave my house. What are you talking about? There's no way that there's a new Hot Wheels game that's any good.
And it's this good.
And it's this good. So yeah, that would be mine anyway.
For my recommendation, it's Dodgeball Academia.
Since
you gave me the recommendation for that, I've just been like, oh, this game is pure bliss. Like, everything about it is brilliant. Like, the writing's funny. The character designs are really great. I love the aesthetics.
I love the animation, the
animation and the actual gameplay. Obviously, when you go into the battle mode and it's just a game of dodgeball with superpowers, it's just like, why has no one done this before? It feels so obvious. It feels like Windjammers Extreme. I love it. Oh, it's just so
good. I'll tell you what, I'll also tag on just very quickly is Sable, which is on PC and Xbox, but that game's performance...
my friend Mitch has been banging on about that.
God, that is in at least my top five game of the year. Like, I finished it. I played about 7 hours and I did one of the endings. There's as many endings as there are masks to collect in the game. But it's like this open world, you know, free exploration thing. The performance on it is horrendous on Xbox. We're talking single digits at times.
Oh, no.
Where it hangs, it literally just hangs for a bit and then goes again. But I love that game so much that I just kind of soldiered through it. But the percentages when you unlock achievements, when I finished it, the people who had finished it, it was 0.7% of people who got to the end of it.
Playing it or just no one's seeing it through?
I think people have started it and then they've given up because of the performance. And then some of the overall milestones, at no point was any of the overall milestones across that 7 hour play higher than about 6 to 7% of players. So hardly anyone is playing that thing. But it is gorgeous. I think maybe wait for another patch, but don't forget about Sable. It's genuinely great. I'd still recommend it now, but it is very rough.
I feel really sorry for indie titles that have like rough launches, because you do lose that groundswell and it's so hard to build up. Like,
I know.
My heart goes out to them. I feel like there needs to be almost like a warning sign or like a siren, a call to arms that happens every couple of months from like the big review channels that just go like, right, remember these indie games, these are where they are now. This is the time to play them.
No, definitely. I was thinking there should be another website, howlongtobeat.com. There should absolutely be a game performance, one of them.
It should be called when to play, like whentoplay.com. So it's like now it is ready to play.
It was that whole thing of like, has it leaked.com? It was like, is it ready to play yet? Like, yes, no. Sable, really gorgeous game. Next question from Ruben: which music band/artist that never worked on the soundtrack of a game do you want to see working on one? Bonus points if you can pitch the game or genre.
Now I would love if Slipknot just stepped up and just did like a full-on like video game album to go with something, because I know that it would be brutally heavy and in all the best ways. But I actually think that they kind of did, or because there's a sample that's being used from one of their songs in the game Gekido from the PlayStation 1. It is a bad game. It's a bad game, but their sample is using it. So I don't know if technically that counts as them appearing in a video game.
I guess they've not done like a score, or like they've not done like a full soundtrack. Because I would like, that's the whole thing, is like you give X band an entire game. Okay, you guys score this. Because like Japanese Breakfast are on Sable.
To change the question somewhat, what video game would you give the soundtrack rights to, as in like, so you've got Doom is in front of you. Which band do you get to make the soundtrack?
Oh my God, give Doom to Periphery. Like, I mean, I don't know.
Because of all the sort of like tasty jams.
This is similar riffs, but I feel like Periphery is a bit more complex. Maybe that would line up with some crazy combo shooting level or something. But you'd need something that has a lot of carnage to it. My mind at the minute is just a mush of Tremonti and Spirit Box, because there's
you've been listening to them a lot.
Oh my, sweet Lord. Like, the Tremonti album is unbelievable. Every single second of that thing is absolutely immaculate. Just massive shout out to Mark Tremonti being a god. But yeah, so I would just give him everything. Just give him Tremonti, give him Doom. Give him Unreal Tournament.
I would just love to take every single open world RPG and just give it to like the math metal and prog bands out there, just to see what they do with it. Like, imagine Scale the Summit doing something for like Skyrim, like walking along and just having this big luscious groovy jam going on in the background. You're like, oh man, I don't even want to explore anymore.
My go-to, if an actual thing would be, I would take Carpenter Brute, because it's like, you've got, if I love obviously
it's the
synthwave stuff.
It's the thumping soundtrack.
It's the thumping stuff. And you've got Carpenter Brute has guested on the likes of Fury. He was on something else recently as well, and Daniel Deluxe did the music for Ghost Runner, which it has its new next gen patch out. That game, by the way, on new
really
gen,
good when it runs now.
Yeah, that thing is a beast. It's like 120 frames, 4K or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say Carpenter Brute, and I would let him do an entire soundtrack, because he did one for Living Machines or whatever it's called, the animated, half animated mini movie that he did. I can't think what you call that now, but anyway, I would give him an open world sci-fi game, not necessarily cyberpunk, but just something that can have that sort of weird macabre, almost horror style approach, because he's very rooted in like 80s slasher horror, mixed with like dark synths and stuff, and I think he could really make something pop that way.
What's your favorite soundtrack that's been done by a band for a game? Because I really dig the No Man's Sky one that's 65 days. It's so good. Like, it's a really beautiful like album.
I don't know if I can't even think of any that many bands that have been given entire soundtracks. Like I said, Japanese Breakfast are on Sable. There are sometimes, you know, you'll get single songs.
Jonah Hex, I think, and I know that's a film, but I think that the video game that accompanied it was also done by Mastodon, and that was really good.
Oh, really?
As well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I know Iron Maiden did the, they had a mobile game where they did the music for it. But
did they actually?
Yeah, sort of Avenged, actually. Cool. But I don't have like a full soundtrack, but I think more crossover appeal between these people. I mean, we mentioned Periphery before, but they're all massive gamers.
I've just had the flashback of of completing that Call of Duty game and unlocking the Avenged Sevenfold music video.
With soap on guitar or whatever it is.
What is this?
We carry on.
Yeah, it's so like, I was there like, what are Avenged Sevenfold doing in my Call of Duty game?
That song, Avenged are, they wax and wane for me. Sometimes they're great, and then other times I'm like, lads.
Right, okay, so this is the thing. What happened was that off the back of like, what was the one that had Almost Easy on? It was like, maybe it was the self-titled. It was like, they finished that, and they were like, oh, you know what, lads, we've gotten some really good reviews here. People are really digging the fact we've got this sort of like prog metal elements in it, but it's also really heavy, and we've got this sort of operatic singing sometimes. This is great. And then M Shadows, probably just like clicked his fingers and was like, but we're not popular enough yet, so let's just become stadium rock. And it was like,
Zachy Vengeance,
dude,
put that bandana on and come over here, let me put my shades on.
The best thing was when he's just kind of like, it's like, oh, you know, that's a lot of notes you're playing, can we just take most of the notes out and just chug, let's just go
Massive shout out to, there's a YouTube channel, a guy called Bradley Hall, who does covers of popular metal bands, rock bands in like 5 minutes. His Avenged Sevenfold video is incredible. The way he drills down on M Shadow's entire vocal style, just being, just over and over again. It's just, it's incredible.
It's the opening of a door that needs some oil. or the sound of a wizard being found in a cave after years of solitude.
It's just someone else. There's always someone laughing in the background of an Avenged song, just going back to the next
All
bit.
The bloody time. What is with that? Every single time it's just kind of like, you hear the chugs and it's like, it's like,
to the rim.
Who's laughing? Is the band laughing at M Shadows?
Oh my God. Avenged, I mean, this is not a music podcast, but Avenged Sevenfold, that's a hell of a thing. I think, to be honest, they might be one of the best bands to give some sort of Call of Duty style thing to as well, because you would assume that...
Safe pair of hands, isn't it?
Yeah, they could flex their operatic muscles a bit more as well.
I tell you what, I want an utterly grimy action fighting game and the music to be done by the band Vanna.
Who's Vanna?
So Vanna is basically a screamcore band that is just, they kind of like got lots of hardcore elements, but they are, imagine if the Billy Talent singer decided one day that he wanted to scream, like screeching scream. That's what it sounds like. It's brutal. And Nails are just a horrific grindcore band, which I just love to just see in a video game.
Because next year's Midnight Flight Express has music by this guy called Noise Cream, which is just really heavy Noise synth Cream. Stuff again. Amazing. But doing a fighting game with screamy music would be great. There's hardly any screamo stuff in most games. It just tends to put
people up. It seems to go down the rock or hip hop thing for fighting games. I'm not entirely sure why that is.
They are missing out, I think. Mm. But next question from Jack Asbury, who says, how is it that insects can easily find their way into your home, but even with you helping them, they can't get out?
It's because they are dumb. I have this after trying to interview them many, many times. I have come to the conclusion after years of research that they can't speak. So therefore, they can't actually tell me why they do.
There is that thing where you open a window. This is a tangent. But you know when you get like there's a little bee or a big bee in the house, and you open the window, and it just twats itself off the window next to the open window. It's like it's right there, mate. It's right there.
Just move along a little bit.
I don't want to move you because you'll sting me. But it's right.
But I noticed that it's like a different response to each of the different types of insect that comes in. Like if it's a bee, like big bee or little bee, you just go like, oh come on, mate. Like you want to help him out. You want to usher him on his way to go do the honey thing. But like if it's a wasp, be like, get out. But also we're like a tentative sort of like, please don't come anywhere near me, just get out. And if it's a fly, you're just kind of like, you silly idiot.
Any fly just reminds me of the things that flies tend to be on, which is I just don't want them in my house at all. It's not a nice time. Once I went to the bathroom in the morning and there was a humongous bee that was just sleeping on the side of the windowsill, and it got up and came at me. I had limbs. I had like arms that was coming at me. It was just like just flying at me. And I was just like, oh, this is not okay at all. I'm going to try and get a cup, and I'm in the middle of the bathroom routine. Oh,
brilliant.
It's not brilliant. Good. But
Did you manage to make it to the bathroom before?
I entered the bathroom and then it came out. I screamed, but like men don't usually scream. Like I'm like, if a guy screams, it's either like Homer Simpson or just kind of like a, oh, like it's not really like an actual yell.
We might need to take a break because I don't know if you can hear, my girlfriend has decided that she's going to hoover the hardwood floors directly above me for some reason.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad.
We'll soldier on. But,
that's pretty funny.
Big love to Kerry. Big love to all the girlfriends that do the cleaning when you're recording podcasts.
Big love to anyone wielding a hoover when someone else is trying to record. One of the many delights of recording from home that we've discovered the last couple of years.
Yep.
Next question from Luke Cullen, who says, hey, legends, what's a risk taken by a game developer that you think isn't given enough credit or praise for? Thanks again for all of that you put together and keep being you. We talked about this a little bit.
Yeah,
but I messaged you with this. I messaged this to you the other day because I was like, this is quite a specific question.
Yeah.
And it was something that got a little bit of a response on Twitter that just said like it was a hell of a thing to try and drill down on. So we haven't addressed it on the podcast, but I wanted to just sort of use it as a way to talk about general risk in the industry, because for me, the go-to is Death Stranding. I feel like Death Stranding is such a crazy, unique, ridiculous, unproven thing. And as much as Sony have like a first party, formula now where you can sort of, you know exactly what you're getting, like Kena Bridge of Spirits I love, but it's very formulaic. Death Stranding feels like the one sort of outlier where it's, you can practically see Hideo Kojima arguing with Jim Ryan, just saying like, well, I want to spend the budget on this insane recreation of Monster Energy
Hideo,
or whatever.
Please stop. Just come on. Just, can we do something normal for a change, please? You promised it was my turn today. Just
exactly.
Like, we go weird, normal. That's how it goes every
And that's
week,
kind of the
Hideo.
Thing.
Like,
I was just
on.
Like, of all the risks taken, especially in the last few years, when you think about how restricted the industry has gotten at that level, like to be able to get Death Stranding and a director's cut version of it, they went back to the well on it, even though the sales dropped off after the first week. That's my thing where I'm just like, say whatever you want about what the game is, the fact that it exists at that production level is genuinely insane.
I think that the biggest risk that Nintendo ever took was trying to release the Virtua Boy and convincing us that this was the future of like 3D gaming. I mean, like, imagine just having the gall to look
they
at
tried.
That piece. It looks like the droid that gets shot to pieces at the beginning of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. It's like a little, like, all the gangly limbs that come up. It was probably the same thing that flew at you in the toilet, to be fair, but look at it. And it's just like, the fact that it's that migraine-inducing red glare.
I never got like, that.
Why are you charging so much for something that will break my neck because of how heavy it is to wear? And
also,
it just gives me an instant headache the moment I look at it.
The thing that I love, though, about, like, 80s Nintendo, I guess, like, early 90s Nintendo, was that, like, 80s itself rush of, like, this is the future, guys. Like, we've hit it. We've hit it. Graphics are not going to get any better than those scanned-in photos of the Mortal Kombat characters. So, like, let's just keep going. And then, like, Nintendo had the Virtual Boy. They had that little robot.
Rob the Robot. And he used to like, it was for the NES, and he used to put, like, spinning tops on different sides, and he would play the game for you somehow.
Stuff like that.
I watched somebody play through a game that was built around that mechanic. Like he would move like a button or like a disc from one button to another, and it would open up walls that allowed the player to go through in the level that they were playing, right? Uh-huh. But it took a full minute for the robot to start up its sequence to drop the thing onto the button. So imagine like, and there were walls every like couple of steps. It was like, how is this game fun? Like,
I love the energy of that entire time period. Nintendo themselves are a good one to go to in a more serious way to address this question, because for me, I mean, even the Metroid Dread, like, you know, the Metroid series, as people dove into its sales, is actually pretty bad. Like, it's very, very much a fan focused hardcore gamers franchise. Like, the average person doesn't play Metroid, but they're happy to put together a full marketing campaign around an entire new Metroid, and it's a 2D one. Like, you know, we said before, there hasn't been a 2D Metroid since the 3DS one. You know, on home console, there hasn't been one for almost three decades. So I tend to look at Nintendo, and as much as, I mean, they've calculated risks, but even something like Breath of the Wild, like the way that game is structured is not like any other open world game, and it's only gone on to influence everything from The Pathless to Immortals Fenyx Rising.
I think that if we give Nintendo, to answer the question of which one do they not get enough credit for, it would be Nintendo's Labo stuff. Like, it was like the instruction kits, the sort of the way that they approached it, like the practicality and tangibility of that product was amazing. It was them embracing their entire backstory of being a toy company first and then moving into video games. And I think that, unfortunately, the fact that they've just said no, there's not going to be any more of it because it just didn't hit the right market in the way that they wanted it to, it's just such a shame, because I feel like we need more stuff like that. I was sick of like gimmicky instruments from the Rock Band and Guitar Hero era. But I do like video game peripheral stuff that allows me to enjoy video games in different means. And I feel like that was almost like a last gasp of the, remember the big bulky controllers that you get from like the mech games and like all of the other crazy stuff that people just went mad for it. This is just them being like, yeah, we're still crazy, but you guys aren't buying it, so bye.
Like, I just love their whole, like, everyone else is doing VR headsets and all these different things. And they were like, why don't we do a cardboard one?
Just playing with cardboard.
Just slot the Switch into it. And to be fair, it works. Like, if you split a feed and stick it to your eyeballs, it does look like you're in a 3D world, like without the level of resolution that comes with the other technology. But yeah, that whole stuff is pretty incredible. Even the Switch itself, just saying like, well, we're actually going to try and hybridize, you know, living room console gaming, handheld gaming, we're going to kind of break the market that way and invalidate our entire range of handhelds. Like, you know, no one, you don't even need to buy a separate handheld anymore because the Switch does both. Things like that I think are really cool.
That's what's utterly amazing about Nintendo, is the fact that you look at their lineage of consoles that they've put out, and there's a few stinkers out there. Like, I would say that the 2DS didn't need to exist, and I'd say that the Wii U maybe wasn't marketed in the right way, and
it had
some great ideas but just did not have the support. But nearly every other console that they put out there has been an absolute banger. Like when you look back at like the SNES, the NES, the Game Boy, and moving all through the different iterations of the Game Boy as well, and all the advances they put onto that, and the Switch, like, I know I need to get one, because we've been having this discussion, and obviously next week and things may change, you never know. But like, I look at that and just think, what a beautiful piece of hardware that is, just in terms of aesthetically, in terms
where
of
they're
what it can
at,
provide. Oh, it's good times.
Like, where they are at now feels like N64 level Nintendo, which has been, like, obviously they had the whole deviation across the 2000s. Obviously the GameCube, very solid console, but then they had the Wii, and that then they went super mainstream, and there was hardly anything on the Wii other than obviously Mario Galaxy, but mostly it was a Wii Sports machine. And I think the Wii U, like you said, wasn't marketed very well. The Wii U would be something to say that there's so much more to it than it gets its due. Like, there are a whole bunch of awesome games on there. Breath of the Wild's even on there. It's just that people forget and think of it as a Switch game. But like, yeah, they've had like, but right where they're at now feels like this really confident, like a confident Nintendo is one of the best things in gaming. Like, they absolutely nail it.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next question from Son of Kratos, who just says, Jackie Chan Adventures, am I right?
Oh, what a brilliant TV show.
I'm not
going to
lie, right? I've not really seen it.
It's really good. It's one of those things where that, and it was like, it wasn't part of the Cartoon Network lineup, but it made its way into my regular rotation of cartoons that I would watch. Mm-hmm. And Jackie Chan Adventures, like, I was clearly too old for it at this point because of the fact that I was like a teenager when it came out.
I remember
seeing it like with like my sister, where she would like watch it sometimes. Like, this is actually really well thought out, really fun and genuinely funny. It gave me, because of the action sequences and the fact that they were questing for lots of like magical items, or there was like a villain of the week they'd have to sort of like dispatch that had mystical powers. It reminded me a lot of like Shaolin Showdown. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No, I've not even, I don't know what that is.
Good times, man. Toonami and Cartoon Network, they were the best back in the
Samurai day. Pizza Cats all the way. I think in regards to Jackie Chan, like, I love Jackie Chan's movies. And Jackie Chan's Stuntmaster, I got working on my phone again. That is...
Nice.
Why is that? I mean, no one's ever going to remaster that and put any budget behind it. But Jackie Chan's Stuntmaster on PS1 was genuinely really fun. Like, you could throw dudes into parts of the environment. You could kick off the walls. Like, it was a nice, chunky, third-person action brawler thing. And I thought that was really cool. But yeah, Jackie Chan Adventures, like you said, it was sort of in the generation below me. I know Ewan used to lose his mind over it, and it was like more synonymous with his age group. Next question from Jacob Sawyer. Okay, I need your guys' help. In my group of mates, I'm the one who plays everything and will recommend loads to play. I'm convinced that my friend Mr. John Norris would love Ghosts of Tsushima, yet I can't sell him on it. Help me, please.
Oh man, I like,
can't believe this, Mr. John Norris.
So
big JN
John, Let's level each other. Like,
Nozza. Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at the footage, right? You're looking at the footage. Have you seen people play the game? You've seen all the critical reviews. You've seen all of the fun that people are having. Why are you standing outside the window looking in at this party?
Pressing your face against the glass.
You're shivering. It's a little bit cold outside. You haven't brought a jacket. But what do you see in there? There's drinks being passed around. There's even some guy who's bringing eggnog, and it's not even Christmas yet, but you think, that's a guy that I want to go and chill out with.
Yeah.
There's a fire roaring inside. Everyone's laughing. And all they spot you. They see you outside. Hey, John, what are you doing, mate? What are you doing out there with you? You nursing a can of cider?
You dripping in the cold, pal.
Yeah, man, just come inside. The door's open, mate. Pick yourself up a ham as you walk in. Let's have a munch and have a good old time.
Why are you being difficult, John? We've not, Jacob Sawyer hasn't included the reason why Mr. John Norris, I'm going to call him Mr. John Norris, isn't as excited about Ghost of Tsushima. But I can only reinforce the fact that it is one of the best games that Sony have ever funded. Like, it's literally one of the best, most essential PlayStation games of the last X many years. Like, it is. It just is.
And now you have even more reason to join in because they pushed out that expansion to it, which allows you to do multiplayer and there's like tons of other bits as well.
There's that whole Legends thing. Just like you said, it's a big old jamboree. Just sort of grab your little plastic red cup and dive the hell in. There's no reason to not play it, Mr. John Norris. And I don't know why you wouldn't.
Come on, mate. I'll tell you what. You can put whatever you like on the hi-fi and we'll play a game of Twister. Come on.
We'll ease you in. Next question from Dylan, who says, what is your ideal video game? Which I quite like as an open-ended thing.
It's just every genre mixed all in one, isn't it?
As a gut feeling, if I said, what's your ideal video game? What does your mind go to? Because I can tell you what mine goes to. Right, okay. Mine, funnily enough, goes to Def Jam and goes to third-person brawler melee martial arts stuff, which is hilarious because there's been like three of them in the last like 15 years. Like there's just been, I'm just completely unsatiated over here.
I tell you what, when Fury came out, you were so like, oh, this game, man, this is exactly what I need right now.
Well, my ideal video game, providing it hits the execution side of it, is Midnight Fight Express. That game just has everything that I just watched that trailer with wide-eyed glee. And Josh said that he said to his missus, this is the most Scott game ever. It's just synthwave, fighting, martial arts, big brawling, crazy Hotline Miami type thing. Midnight Fight Express looks gorgeous. I was gutted it was delayed till 2022.
If I was to design a video game for you, Scott, it would be a stealth game, but with martial arts combat. I basically bring back the Tenchu series just for you, right?
Well,
but
I would set
it in the future, so it's like Neo Future Tokyo, right? Yeah. And you've got like laser beam katanas, but it's still a stealth game primarily, but it gives you the option occasionally to kick ass.
It's a bit, if you take Ghost Runner's
aesthetic. I'll chuck in a racing little segment in as well, because I know you like that from the director's cut of Death Stranding. There'll be a little like pod
racing
section
for you. Give me a cargo cannon and a set of robot legs to carry me around the landscape. I mean, that's the whole thing with, like, if you combine Ghost Runner stuff with, like, because the Origami series, the new Origami series, Origami 2 is out, is literally just Tenchu or Shinobido. It's just like a full-on rip-off of that style. I guess if I was going to design one for you, it'd have to be some sort of No More Heroes mixed with Denis Suarez open world game, but you're wiping out 20,000 dudes with one giant lightsaber. And everyone erupts into coins, maybe? I don't know.
Right. Okay. So if we are designing my perfect game, it would literally be like No More Heroes, because you'd have a group of very, very, let's just say, colorful characters.
Anime lads
with really, really ridiculous designs and over-the-top backstories. You would set it in the Dynasty Warriors like combat thing of just you versus 1,000 in order to get to those big boss battles. Mm-hmm. But before the battle started, it would be a heavy, intensive tactics game where you get to plan your battalions. Dynasty Tactics was my favorite game because it was actually Dynasty Warriors, but with a tactical edge to it. And I was like, or Kessen. I don't know if you played that.
I didn't play Kessen, but I saw it be played back in the day. Funny enough, we've mentioned XCOM twice. Phoenix Point is out today. There is no coverage of that game, but Phoenix Point is made by the guy that created XCOM.
It's Julian Gossip.
Yes, it is his follower, Big Goz, as he's known to his friends. And his Phoenix Point's out today, but it's not. It is getting a PS5 series upgrade, but that's not today, which I thought was a bit of a disappointment.
Weirdly, I thought this game was already out for PC, or is it just for console? Okay, so yeah.
No, it is. It's been out for a year, and then today is the Behemoth edition on consoles, but it's the PS4 and Xbox One version. And then they just said next gen is coming soon. So I was like, okay.
I really want this game to do well, because if you haven't seen anything about it, fellow listeners at home, it's like XCOM, but all of the aliens have come from beneath the sea, so they're all like crustaceans and like lobsters and crabs, but with like big mutated bits on it. And the gameplay gimmick change from your regular XCOM fare is that you can target specific limbs in order to weaken them, affect their movement, and also make them less dangerous from afar. It's a really cool game. Lots of changes, very difficult, incredibly challenging.
Okay, it is on Game Pass as well. If you have that, you can just nab it from there. Another win for Game Pass. Next question from Derek McMullen, who says that he knows that I'm not motivated to do side content, but does it help when there's a story connected, like in Batman Arkham Knight? Also, Jules, if you were going to actually play an actual tabletop game with the What Culture crowd, what game outside of D&D would you pick?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think that I would choose at the moment. At the moment, I am really enjoying every single session I've played of Escape the Dark Castle or Escape the Dark Sector, because no matter who you play it with, even if they're not like big board game fans, by the end of it, they'll come out of it going, that was utterly brilliant. Mm-hmm. The concept of it is that you use a deck of cards that are all randomly assigned to create a passage of events that goes on throughout your story. And at the very bottom of the deck, there's a boss card that you need to fight. And the way you fight them is by rolling dices and looking for symbols on them that match up to the enemy's health pool. And you'll get to take whatever dice off that it relates to. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of choose your own adventure style bits to it. So it's like, for example, we'll run through a thing for Scott right here today, a live thing of it. So you come around the corner and there's two guards discussing something, a dead body next to them, and he's got laser wounds fresh like steam rising from his body. They clearly just shot him. They turn to you and say freeze, and it'll give you the option like, do you attack or do you say like pretend that you're one of the guards sort of thing. Mm. And so as a group, you've got to discuss this, come up with some different options, and then just play it out as it happens. So you create your own story within like a prescribed events deck. It's very, very fun.
That sounds really cool. That we played, me and my wife played a lot of Boss Monster and Dice Masters and stuff on the weekend. But Boss Monster's kind of, in terms of like the different, like matching different icons to who you pull into your own dungeon and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. This is not going to make any sense to anyone who doesn't know what that game is. But board games, though, there was a whole thing across the last few years, not to spend too much time on it, but there was a sort of board game renaissance or revival or the next level of board games across the last few years where like people associate the term board games. I know the tabletop games became its own thing, but like, you know, that whole assumption of like, oh god, it's going to be boring, it's a board game, but like there are so many really well thought out, really cool mechanically, conceptually tabletop games now. Like, you know,
you and I played the Dark Souls card game like a while back, and that is such a fun game. Like Steamforged, for those in the know, they make basically video game board games is what they specialize in. They've done the Resident Evil games, they've done the Dark Souls games, they've done Horizon Zero Dawn. There's like a few new ones that are coming up that I can't talk about, but they are really big like IPs that are like very cool.
Because there's the there's the Dark Souls card game. There's also like the overall Dark Souls, the official game, where you get all the different figures. You got to lay out the dungeons. That stuff's so good. You you can convert any table into a giant Dark Souls dungeon and get through it bit by bit. It's tabletop. It's good, isn't it? Games are good, to be honest, just regardless of what form they're in. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, all right, lads, great content as always. Thank you very much. My question is, should the Dragon Age trilogy get the Mass Effect treatment and be remastered? Dragon Age Origins could certainly do with it. Origins has not aged very well.
The thing is that the Dragon Age games, they never really captured my interest as much as the likes of the Mass Effects and Jade Empire and stuff like that. I just never really got onto it, really. I heard amazing things, and Dragon Age Inquisition always like piqued my interest, but I never followed through with it. It's weird. I can't even tell you why.
That was my thing, because I didn't play them at the time. I played Inquisition when it came out. I thought Inquisition was quite impressive. Like, I think because 2014 was barren, so Inquisition stood out quite a bit. But I liked it as a BioWare game in 2014. And then I went back to Origins and I was like, oh, this is quite rough if you don't have sort of the initial nostalgia for it or something like that. For me, it doesn't age as well as something like a KOTOR does. But I don't know, maybe I just need to try again. Maybe it was because it was in the shadow of Inquisition and I was like, oh god, I can't do 2 80-hour RPGs back to back kind of thing.
Yeah, the thing is though that it's like the Dragon Age games, I've heard that they get like really good, but there are some very ropey bits, and I wonder if you remade them the same way that the Mass Effect trilogy got the Legendary Edition, you would actually have to do a lot more mechanical work to bring it up,
because Mass Effect,
even at its worst, was still pretty good.
Well, I never minded Mass Effect 1's combat. I know that it has aged. It is weird. Yeah. You throw grenades with back button. Whatever.
I'm glad they've changed it for them. Yeah. Like they've updated it.
And the Legendary Edition is much better. Like, it makes that game so much better. But like, yeah, I think if they brought Dragon Age back, they should kind of reconsider a lot of the combat stuff, because it is that weird top-down kind of half turn-based approach.
Yeah, it's very odd.
That could probably be tightened up. Last question from Darren Martin. What games still to come this year are you both most excited about? What comes to mind, Jules Bill?
The thing is, though, that I don't even remember what's on the release radar thing. Let me go. Games.
I wonder if Back 4 Blood is on your radar as a Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, I mean, I am excited. Although I was a bit put off by Ben Roy saying it wasn't as good.
I didn't think it was that good either, but I never liked Left 4 Dead. I know it put me up against the wall, but I didn't really like it. But mine's absolutely Metroid. I just Metroid. Metroid and Halo. to be honest.
Yeah, Metroid Dread is shaping up to be a fantastic title. There just seems to be so much going for it at the moment, and the fact that it's just adding in that sort of layer of survival horror into it. So, I mean, of course. Yeah. I mean, there's Alan Wake Remastered is coming out. I don't know if you can count that. I mean, it goes back into our usual thing of, does a remaster count?
Depends
as a
how
new
much
game?
They change, I guess. But even then, I don't know. I think because for Halo, there's the flighting thing this weekend. It starts tonight, actually, at 6 o'clock, where you can play the beta. And I've managed to get in on that. So I know it's not a hard thing to get into. You just got to sign up to a bunch of stuff. But I finally got that through. So I'm finally going to be able to see what the hell the Halo Infinite even is, considering it was this weird on fire mush last year. Hopefully it's better this time.
I've just seen that Advanced Wars 1 and 2 reboot camp is coming out in December. I'm actually very, very keen for that. I didn't even know that was coming out.
I wouldn't have expected that.
I've got
a little, because there's Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl, which I'm looking forward to in terms
you're
of
looking forward to
I want
to
play as Aang and Korra, and I want to batter SpongeBob, but I can't believe there's no voice acting in it. That kind of single-handedly broke it a bit for me. The Demon Slayer game is later this month as well.
Got both Pokemon games coming out as well.
Pokemon looks sweet. I'm curious what the GTA 5 thing is, but it's just mild curiosity. I don't care about GTA anymore.
You know what? I'm going to put some money behind a big AAA title. I'm actually very excited about Battlefield 2042.
Same.
I'm not like into the whole sort of like wacky gimmicks, hello fellow kids sort of thing that's trying to be like edgy, but I am into Battlefield games, and I can totally predict what's going to happen. We're going to have a really shoddy launch, and then this game is going to get real good in about 6 months' time.
Well, that's the thing.
When has a DICE game ever come out that has been stable on launch?
I know. And it's like they've talked about, they announced some of the beta dates. So it seems like if they nail the beta period and they do learn from it in terms of server load and stuff like that, like this, I think it's their year to lose it, basically. Yeah. I think they're so far ahead in regards to perception. Like, no one cares about Call of Duty this year. Like, the Vanguard beta barely went down with any positivity. Halo's doing pretty well, but that's about it. I feel like Battlefield's leading. Like, I love the fact that this year we've got all three games, like Call of Duty, Battlefield, and Halo. It's been almost a decade since that's happened, which is really, really cool to see. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Like, Forza Horizon's still to come as well. Mine would definitely be Metroid Dread, followed by Demon Slayer. And there's Mario Party as well, just thrown in there.
Yeah, I'm actually low-key excited about Mario Party, because it's got the online play, you and I might be able to play together, and that'd be
Oh, we can, yeah. Once you get your hands on something that you might get your hands on, then we can
get my hands on a Switch, who knows?
We'll see. We'll check back in next week. But thanks to everybody for sending in their questions and talking points. We'll put another tweet out next week on Thursday. My Twitter is @LP89. Jules, what is yours?
Mine is @RetroJ with a zero.
Beautiful. Thanks again to everybody for joining us. This has been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UPP, the UPP, the UPP. And we will catch you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.